Good morning. Welcome to Digging the Dirt. I have only one Becky, Becky Hart, and the inestimable Betsy Ayers. Good morning.
Good morning, Anne.
Good morning.
Okay, so, well, let's see. In 1997, the three of us were in Master Gardener class, and a group of us got together and thought it would be fun to do radio. And at the time, I was doing classical programming every other week, alternating with Jan Faber from 6 to 9. And the idea of getting up later seemed kind of cool. And we started doing this group project. There were about six of us.
Well, you've got me there. I have to say I give you the full credit for doing this.
Oh, not at all. No. It was a group effort, and then several people thought they wanted to become radio trained, and Becky was one. And
Becky, was that the first time you had done radio? Because you had such a presence here for so long.
Yeah, it was. And pardon me, I have morning throat. When you become a master gardener, you are supposed to, when you become a master gardener, you're supposed to, okay, let's get the mic thing here, okie dokie. You have a project. It's a give back. And so that graduating group in 1997, some of us with Anne at the helm decided to do a radio show, a garden radio show. And it's been going on pretty much every other doggone Tuesday ever since the spring in 1997. Now, Anne needed other engineers and programmers in the on-air room, and so I had always wanted to do radio and was scared to death of the technology, and I got tapped to learn to engineer, and that was the beginning of my radio kind of career. And I became the Thursday morning folk show fixture until I think about 2005, and I also did Shady Grove a couple Saturdays a month. It was where I met my husband, Kevin Palo, and today's our anniversary.
Oh,
15 years ago we got married, so we're actually a radio family.
15 years, wow.
Yeah, time flies.
Sure,
so
does.
Anyway, so it all started for me around Digging the Dirt and the Master Gardener. Master Gardener Project, and Betsy and Ann and I did this. We were regular fixtures for quite a while. I don't know how long, but I've got copious notes from our different shows where we would talk about all kinds of seasonal things.
I think we would do one program a quarter, so we would do four a year. That was around our schedule.
Okay.
Well, gardening is so wonderful. It's a great way to meet other people. The Master Gardener program is a fantastic program. And, you know, along with walking and yoga, gardening is something you can do your whole life, and you never learn it all by a long shot. I'm still learning things all the time, and it's really fun to have you doing the program consistently, Anne, all these years, and to have met such wonderful friends in the Master Gardening program, because we share this interest. And others, but...
Right. That's true. Yeah. So this has been an interesting year. It's been a fabulous year for some things and difficult for others. Tomatoes has been a 100% yes. We have the most... We have been eating... We actually have more tomatoes than we can eat for the first time ever.
Well, you know what you can do with those tomatoes, Anne. You can them.
What a segue.
We were talking before the show started about canning, and Anne said, oh, I've canned all kinds of things, and I had also canned all kinds of things many, many years ago, and now have had a sort of a lurching renaissance into canning, because it seems like the largesse in the garden and the fruit trees this year and the wild berries is pretty phenomenal.
So what have you been canning?
Well, not much so far. I limit myself to things that aren't going to turn to ptomaine because I don't totally trust myself to do it the right way. So when we had our wild windstorm a couple of weeks ago, I lost a tremendous number of apples, which were not ready to eat. But, you know, a quick look on the internet for crab apple jelly made me realize that all those little green apples would be really good for that. And so I made jelly, and I forgot how much work canning is, but I also forgot how much pleasure there is in seeing those beautiful jars of jelly lined up. And there's something particularly charming about apple jelly because it's the most wonderful, beautiful color. And it tastes good, too.
Okay, so what color is it?
It's a blush pink.
Mmm, nice.
Sort of like champagne without the bubbles. A nice champagne. Well, champagne isn't really pink, is it? Let me think. What would it be like?
Not the champagne I drink.
Well, I haven't had any champagne for a long time, actually.
me too.
Just a blush pink, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And translucent.
Yes, yes, and I did follow the instructions. I didn't squeeze it or touch it or stir it, because apparently if you do that, then your jelly becomes cloudy. So this was clear, it's just like a jewel. I just love it.
How can you cook without stirring?
Well, you know, when you're putting it through the jelly bag is when you don't want to, you're thinking, oh, but look at all this liquid that's still in there. I think I'm going to give it a really good squeeze and get it all into the pot before you add the sugar to make the jelly. And if you do that, then your jelly becomes cloudy.
So the oils on your hands actually contaminate the jelly substance.
Really? That was...
Is that what I'm hearing?
No, I think what happens is you probably squeeze a little too much of the particles of the cooked...
The sediment,
yes.
Okay, gotcha. You can tell how much I can.
Well, yeah.
You can tell I'm not a chemist.
Well, last year...
We're gardeners.
Heck. Yeah, we had lemon cucumbers by the buckets, and I got rid of lots of them throughout the neighborhood.
You didn't. Don't tell me you made cucumber jelly.
Ugh.
Well, if people make jalapeno jelly, I think cucumber jelly would be fine.
I made
it's probably a great
carrier. I made pickles that turned out to be I didn't get my pickling spices. I overdid it, and they're terrible. I have a lot of jars that I need to open up and dump, and it may be that I can open some of them up and rinse them. And maybe tone it down. I don't know. But anyway, I brought them out for the family, and it was a big no. But I did make some lemon cucumber relish, kind of a sweet relish that's delicious.
That sounds good.
So I have some jars of that. And this year so far, I've done 30 quarts of peaches.
Mm. Wow.
And so because my family loves peaches, and so... That's a way to have peaches year-round. And those jars are just gorgeous.
But, Anne, I know you don't have a peach orchard.
I know. I have one tree, and we had fabulous peaches
really?
On it.
Really?
But I didn't can any of those. We ate every one of them.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, we even tried to eat the ones that were windfalls, that had bird pecks, that were full of slugs. we didn't want to waste anything. The ones I found under the tree, under the bushes, were mealy and horrible. But I still tried.
That's what we do. We're so proud of our...
Well, it's so amazing. This peach tree came from the compost. It was a volunteer.
I remember that story.
And it's big.
And it produces peaches?
The peaches are... Okay, how big is that?
Can you see that, radio audience?
It's like 4 inches?
A grapefruit.
A softball. Softball.
Big, great, big... And so, I mean, this was the year that last year they were big and they tasted awful. So this year, every year it's like, next year we're cutting it down. Okay, so if the fruit's good this year, we won't cut it. Okay, the fruit's good. It was ruining the front bed. It's right, it's right in the kitchen.
Yeah, right. That's funny. Yeah, I would really encourage the listening audience to think about taking a turn at canning up some... Even if it's just applesauce, and I did make quite a bit of apple butter, which is fun to make, which is a lot easier.
Oh, you did that and the jelly?
Yeah, so far. And I'm going to sort of branch out, so to speak, and see what else I can think about canning a little bit later. But in my effort to find a canning kettle, I finally found one in Cannon Beach. But so many people said, oh, I gave that up years ago. I suppose people have freezers and they use those. But there was something about putting things in glass jars that really appealed to me. Especially because I read all the time about this terrible plague of plastic that we're dealing with, and everything that you see and buy is wrapped in plastic. And I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to just have this food in glass jars? So with that in mind and having this free food to put up, I thought, I'm not going to use the freezer. I don't have a very big freezer anyway. So it's fun. So I was standing in line at a store, a large store in Seaside. Everyone who lives there knows what I'm talking about. And because it was the only place I could find canning jars and canning lids that day, because it was late in the evening. Of course, I waited too late to start this project. But the charming young checker whose line I was in had never heard of apple butter, and she never knew anyone who did any canning. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, you can go to the Extension Service and take classes. There's a lot of information online. And I thought, well, it was kind of charming in a way that she really didn't have a clue about canning food. I thought it was sort of sad, but she was so interested in what I was doing and wanted to talk about it. But of course, she's at work and I'm trying to leave so I can get home to my project and finish it before midnight. But so, Anne, this is your chance to plug the Anne can remember the phone number of the Extension Service. So give it to us, Anne.
All right. It is 503-325-8573. And they offer canning classes, and there are publications in the office as well as online at the OSU Extension for how to can. I'm going to be canning tuna as soon as I can get some tuna in my hands. It's incredibly simple, and it's the best tuna you could ever eat, and it's not in a can. You know,
right.
It's in a jar, and I usually can enough at a time that I don't can for several years. And so I'm hoping to do, you know, I don't know, like two canners full, which are half pints of whatever they are, whatever that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, those small cup, jars.
Small
yeah.
And I use the wide mouth for fish mm-hmm. because it's impossible to get them out of a narrow mouth. So a wide mouth is good. Mm-hmm. And the cooker, the canner holds about 21 of those. So if I do two of those,
that's a lot of tuna fish.
That's pretty.
That's a good batch,
right? And so I probably wouldn't do two in one day.
Do you have to use a pressure cooker
for tuna? Oh yeah,
yeah. I don't have that for apples. You don't.
Yeah, you don't have to do that for fruit. You need to get to 15 pounds of pressure for 80 minutes.
Wow!
So it's a big deal. And Barry's been doing a lot of distilling this summer. Plums and making rum and whatever's coming up, apple, whatever's getting ripe. And he bought this big propane burner, and it's big enough that I can put the pressure cooker on that and actually cook the fish outside.
Nice. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
And I think that's going to keep the kitchen from being, well, it will. It'll keep the whole house from smelling like fish. It'll be the first time ever. I mean, we started canning. You know, one of my patients in my very first year in practice was talking to me about canning. Our first summer, we started our practice in August, and I went, I want to do that. And so I went off and bought a canner, and I've been canning ever since. I did canning in Portland of fruit, and my technique was bad. I would mold everything.
Yum.
Or everything would mold, yeah. All right, let's take a break. Oh, you know, maybe we should. Today is the beginning of Pledge Drive, and we have done many, many, many pitch programs, but we were let off the hook. But that doesn't mean that as a community we're off the hook. We all need to support this enterprise that brings us so much richness throughout the year. So I think it would be great if you would give a call, 325-0010 or 1-800-518-0010. And let us know that you're there and that you support us and that you think we should keep going.
Sounds good.
Yep.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Dig in the Dirt.
this evening.
Well, thanks to Becky for that awesome music. That was fun.
Thursday Folk coming to you soon.
Really? Yeah. So you're listening to Dig in the Dirt, and I'm with Becky Hart and Betsy Ears, and we're talking about, I don't know, whatever. But we're going to talk about fruit trees and lack of water. And Sunday, a friend was coming over, and I wanted to give her essentially a CSA from my yard. So I'm running around. So I thought, I'm going to dig some potatoes. And I've been out there watering regularly, but not the last week and a half because it's been raining quite a bit, I thought. Under a half an inch under the dirt was completely dry. And everywhere I dug, and the potatoes weren't as big as I thought they should have been. So it's not wet enough out there, even though it's been raining. And I say, even though it looks like it might rain today, we need to water.
Right.
I mean, if you want to eat it, if you don't want to lose it, right?
Right. One of the things I've noticed this summer that I'm grateful for, people have finally let their lawns go dormant,
mm-hmm.
Which is what they do when they have heat stress. That's what the grass, the fescues do when they get heat stress. They don't die. They go dormant, and they will come back green when the temperatures get cool again and the rains return. Unfortunately, if you've got a bank of permanent herbaceous perennials or trees that are lining in beds lining your lawn and you're letting your lawn go brown, make sure your trees are getting enough moisture to stay alive, because I'm concerned that that little solo specimen tree in the middle of the yard is going to have a real problem recovering from what it went through this summer. And the same with all the perimeter beds in your yard. Now I'm talking about not only vegetable gardens, but landscape plants. So be sure to go out there with a little trowel or your finger or whatever, and poke around the soil. And if it's dry down below a half inch or so, come up with a watering plan and save those plants. We don't know what the future holds in terms of the weather. We could get slammed with some really cold weather this winter, and any plant that goes into the winter that's drought stressed is going to be less able to withstand whatever winter throws at it. So,
and whatever diseases show up in the spring.
And diseases are going to target weakened plants. So anything you can do now to make sure those plants are off to a good start going into fall, you'll do much better through the winter and into the future. You made an investment into those trees, so do them a favor and mm-hmm. make sure they've got adequate water.
You know, this time of year, I frequently see that my rhodies, which are well-established, old, I mean, they were huge when we bought the place, get stressed. And I don't usually water them until I say, oh, they don't look right. And I haven't seen that yet, but I'm starting to think maybe I should just water them just because they've gotten stressed in the past.
Well, rhodies are shallow rooted, and typically the soil, the roots are sort of in a mound below the canopy of the outline of the shrub. They're also evergreen. They're not silk plants, so you will get leaf drop, and some of the leaves will turn yellow. Sometimes if there's a mottling kind of pattern on the leaves, you may have a vitamin or a mineral deficiency in the soil. But typically, if they look kind of parched, mm-hmm. they can use water. If they've got a little bit of yellow leaves, pick those off. They're not going to return to color. Just pick them off and give the plant a benefit from not having to hang on to those leaves that are going to go anyway. If you haven't deadheaded yet, deadhead your plants. Do a little selective pruning. If you've got dead limbs, clean those up. And yeah, definitely water. Mm-hmm. Definitely water.
Let's talk about fruit trees. Can you see it when a tree starts to get stressed?
Yeah. Totally. The color in the foliage is different.
Oh, they start to curl up, too, and the ends get brown.
Well, but before that, mm-hmm. you know, it's like a house plant that's dry. There's just kind of a tone to the leaf, and I don't mean like palpating. It's a visual thing. When they're healthy, they kind of give off a little bit of a shine. I think anybody that's a gardener knows what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. It's really not that woo-woo.
You don't have to see their aura.
No. but you know, typically after the summer we've had, and this may be a blip. This rain.
Well, yeah, I think I heard a weather report that we're supposed to have, you know, warm weather
another
next week.
Okay, a nice Indian summer. Well, it's too early for Indian summer. It's still summer, for crying out loud.
Right. Yeah. But, don't rush.
But on the fruit trees, the other thing to make sure to do besides adequate water is make sure they're not competing down in the root area with the grasses or other plants that don't belong there, so that the tree's getting all the moisture and all the nutrients that they can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, what about people have different styles of watering. So I'm talking about hand watering. We have the spritzers, and then they just sort of sprinkle things and think that's watering.
Oh, you mean the gardener?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
And then we have the ones who, you know, there's the putting the gallon bucket with a little hole in it next to the tree, then that percolates over time. Then we have the person who's willing to stand there for 10 minutes at each tree and get it. You know, we have those different kinds of waterers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the dangerous one is the spritzer.
Yeah.
Because they think they're doing an adequate job, and they're getting the grass wet, they're getting the top of the soil wet, and the
sometimes they water the foliage.
Oh, God. Don't do that.
That's not really helping the tree.
Right.
Well, I think anybody who's concerned about whether they're adequately watering just needs to get down on their hands and knees with a trowel and find a place and dig a little hole and take a look at, you've put the sprinkler on this bed and it's been on there 15 minutes, you know, get out your plastic bag and kneel down there and dig a hole and see how far down that water has gone. And it's shocking how little goes in. You think you've really watered and it's just dry as a bone down there. And if you're growing anything in your vegetable garden, especially a root crop,
mm-hmm.
it's going to need a lot more water than a half an inch down and then have it be really dry.
Well, it's not, no water is getting to the roots of the plant.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the most superficial level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have been shocked by that for years when I think I've just watered a flower bed, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's not even wet more than a quarter of an inch down. It's almost like a mystery, like where did all that water go? I mean, it didn't run off. It seems to be on the dirt, but it sure takes a lot of water.
It takes a lot more than people think, and definitely.
Well, the soil holds water. It doesn't necessarily go to the roots, the root zone. The soil holds water, and it's gravity, so it will sink. It will sink. And just because you've got a plant there doesn't mean the root is going to access the water that ends up in the, you know, in the interstitial spaces in between the soil particles. So that's why you have to do an adequate amount. And also, if you can learn to read foliage, I think, too, you can tell when the plants are adequately watered.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have a potato question. So I'm looking at my pathetic potatoes. I mean, there, some of them were nice, and I took out some. The plants look like hell, of course. Is there any point in trying to keep water it? Are they going to get bigger, or am I done?
Are they done for the season?
Are the plants done? Are they keeled over and brown now?
Well, they don't look terrific. Some of them are actually not bad. Most of them, some of them actually have some green. So if they still look living, then I could still water?
I would think that they're probably still growing the potato tuber.
Yeah.
Is the potato tuber, that's kind of repetitive, I guess, but...
Can't you... How big are the potatoes? Are they ready to harvest? Oh, they're teeny.
Can you see that, listening audience?
Yeah.
Not very big.
Small tennis ball size?
Yeah. not very big.
Okay, so they need more time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they need water.
Yeah, probably.
They need Ann to stand. Oh, I know. I've got a sprinkler that would be good in there. It's just this little teeny one.
Sprinklers are good. You know, I put in a irrigation system in my flower beds years ago, and I just got a manual timer, and it's hooked on to the hose bib, and I turn it on, and I crank it up, you know, to an hour, hour and a half, depending on how long it's going to take to water those beds, and I just do it on... you can get them that are automated. They're quite expensive, and I don't know how well they'd hold up in this climate, but the ones I've got have lasted for years, and it just makes it so much easier to get the watering done.
On a timer.
And you're talking about an hour. Yeah, we put in a drip system, and then it gradually fell apart, and I didn't keep up with keeping it functioning. And I remember we would have it on for an hour at a time, and it would take that much water to keep things hydrated.
Or an hour and a half sometimes. Yeah. And this summer I've done it two or three times a week. When I was traveling this summer, friends helped me out by watering, and I had a heck of a water bill. But I'll tell you what, the garden looked great when I got back, because I don't know that they were keeping touch with each other about who's actually turning the sprinkler on. And I think it got watered a lot more than maybe I would tend to do it. And it really paid off, all that water. Well, not in terms of paying the water bill, but the plants liked it.
Well, you know, that is one of the issues that happens. We go away, nobody waters, everything. We come back and things are dead. This happens every time we go away.
Well, you need to find some other friends to water, because mine looked fabulous.
Wow. I want the Cannon Beach folks to come and water my place.
All right. I'm sure they'd love to drive to Astoria and do that for you.
Yeah, I'll bet. That would be good. Yeah. Yeah, we're going away next week, and I don't want to have a problem. But we do have someone staying at the house.
Good. So I would encourage everybody to go out there. We're running out of time, and we've been talking about fruit trees, and we've been talking about how dry it is, and I'm hoping that it will start raining pretty soon. And I would encourage everyone to go out there and buy yourself a little apple tree or an Asian pear tree or a couple of them and put them into your garden this year. It's such a pleasure to have fruit growing in your own yard. You know what's on there, mm-hmm. what hasn't been sprayed. Or if you spray it, you know what spray you're using. If it feel like mm-hmm. it's something that you'd want to eat, then go ahead and put it on your tree.
There's all kinds of current plants that don't get quite as big as fruit trees that can go get tucked in amongst the rhododendrons and the hydrangeas. Currants are really great for jelly. All kinds of small fruits that you can put in your landscape if you don't feel like taking on a tree.
Well, I wouldn't ever plant a full-size tree, because then I'd never be able to reach it. But there are dwarf varieties mm-hmm, out there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you can keep them trimmed.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Well, this year we had problems with our pears and our plums with fungus when the fruit was setting, killing the tips of the trees and the...
The blossoms?
And so we lost all the fruit. And
fruit set.
We did not do dormant spraying, because mm-hmm. I was sick last year, you know, during the winter, and we didn't dormant spray, and the difference was dramatic on the health of the fruit trees. Mm. And so I'm like, okay, what do we need to get lined up? You know, when can we start? And at Brims, they said, well, you don't want to dormant spray until like February. It's like, I want to start the day that the leaves fall off, you know? I want to be on top of it. I want healthy. We had the most gorgeous Asian pear tree, or we have, and it had fruit on it last year, and none.
Some Asian pears are alternate bearers.
Yes, they are. That's been my experience. Even with my apples.
No, but it's set. It's set.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't think that it would set if it was an alternate bearer.
We had a great year for pollinators, I thought. It was a nice, consistent spring, and there were a lot of bees out. And I feel like, for me anyway, that was the success of the fruit in my garden this year.
Mm. Well, we had a lot of bees. We have a lot of flowering things of all different kinds that the bees like. So, yeah, anything that you can do to plant flowering things that bees like, and flies, and would be
all
awesome. Well, it is 9:59. You're listening to KMUN Astoria, 91.9 FM, KTZB Tillamook, 89.5. And streaming on the web at coastradio.org, wherever you are. This program will be available as a podcast if you know someone that must listen to it. They can do it. All right, now it's officially 10 o'clock. Thank you, Becky and Betsy.
Thank you, Anne. Thanks, Anne. This was fun.
Yeah.